Welcome to the Grand Cast, episode number 12, an even dozen. Today is Thursday, March 23rd, 2017. Tonight, or this evening, it's not quite nighttime, it's still light out.
Dusk.
It's dusky. This dusk, my guest is the wonderful Aaron Betka. Thank you so much for being here tonight, to dusk.
This fine dusk eve.
Yes.
Thank you for having me, Chris. It's truly a pleasure.
From my side as well.
We have a side drawn out too, so.
There's a line. Please don't cross. There's it. A very distinct line on the floor right now. It's tape, so.
It'll come up.
Yeah.
I just had to make sure I had my space. Thanks for making it a safe space.
I didn't say safe, I just said space.
Fair.
There are boundaries, but they're not insurmountable.
It's just tape.
Yeah. So I like to start out each episode going over the mission statement and goals, and then there's a special addendum to the introduction here. So the mission statement is, the purpose of the Grand Cast is to explore the comedy scene in Grand Rapids, Michigan, as it exists in 2017 through a series of conversations. And the goals, there's two. The first one is to post one new episode weekly, which I've been maintaining
for 12 weeks.
For 12 weeks?
Nice.
Well, 10 weeks. The 11th one gets published this Sunday, and then yours will be next Sunday. Because I like to have one backlog, just in case.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the second goal is to make at least one person's day better through the creation of quality content.
Aww. So I've already made my day better by having me here, Chris. So
I'll just check that off right now.
Yeah, you're actually literally checking that off. That's wonderful.
Halfway there.
All right. This is going to be a short podcast.
I think this is going to be a long one. I have a lot of material prepared.
Wonderful.
It is semi-improvisational, but I do a lot of preparation, so...
That's good.
It's a hybrid.
It's important.
And then the addendum is noting that this is the season finale of the Grand Cast, season one.
Bum, 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 bum. Yeah, I'm going to leave you with a cliffhanger, so you've got to come back for season two.
Ooh. All right, let me add that to my notes.
That's what we call foreshadowing in the art industry.
Let's see. Cliffhanger.
I'm going to write that down, too. Or am I?
I can't see the notepad. It may or may not be written down over there. There's a lot of notes already.
Well, I got a lot to say, Chris.
You're pushing an agenda this evening?
I truly am.
Okay.
Yep.
So Monday was March 20th, or 19th? 19th?
It was in March.
Is it the 23rd or the 24th?
God, you're asking already. 23rd. So it was the 20th.
Yep. So I should have just stuck with my, what's it called when you write things down ahead of time? The script?
Yeah. I don't work with them
stuck
very
with
often.
The script. Yeah. So Monday, March 20th was the spring or vernal equinox. On the equinoxes, the length of day and night is nearly equal. The vernal equinox marks the moment that the sun crosses the celestial equator, which is the imaginary line in the sky above the Earth's equator, and it crossed it from south to north. So, thank science that winter has finally ended, and as spring blossoms around us, you will notice a few changes in the Grand Cast, beginning with next week's episode. Very exciting times.
Is that a cliffhanger?
Sure. Yeah, I think so.
That's fun.
I don't do a lot of cliffhanging, but...
Yeah. That'll be exciting. Yeah, I have noticed the sun out more, and it has been rather lovely.
Oh, yeah. Lack of snow. Very enjoyable.
Absolutely. When you were saying things, I thought I was going to be quizzed on them, to be honest. So later. I was trying to memorize everything that you were saying about vernal things and the equinox and
I believe
the sun.
Ver is from the Latin root for spring.
That's right. That's right. I affirm that.
Thank you. So the podcast is divided into two sections. First part's an interview, where I am the interviewer and you are the interviewee. Some people get that relationship confused and start asking me questions, which is wildly inappropriate. Just a heads up.
Oh, God. All of these notes that you see before me are questions about you. So this is going to be an awkward one.
Oh, boy.
That's okay. I like answering questions about myself.
Oh.
They're not about me.
They're
about the equinox?
Mostly equinox questions. And then the second part of the show is a series of mini segments, which vary by episode. So let's jump into this interview.
I'm ready for that.
What is your favorite color?
Gray. I also really enjoy yellow and white.
What shade of gray?
That's a really good question. Most people don't ask me that.
Oh.
So they just assume their own gray. And I kind of like that. But if I had to choose one, it's a nice, deep blue gray.
Like steel?
Yeah. Mm. Steel. That's a good one.
Yeah.
You should design Crayola.
I've been approached by them in the past.
Yeah.
But we had some conflicts of perspective.
I understand that.
Yeah.
Well, option B, start your own crayon company. And I said crayon. I didn't say crayon.
Is that the proper way to say it?
It's the new way to say it.
Crayon? That's how it's spelled.
Yeah.
But this is Michigan, so...
Crayon. Crayon.
Yeah,
that color gray. I'd ask you yours, but that's inappropriate, so I'm going to tell you what yours is.
Oh, thank you for respecting my boundaries and then immediately violating them.
Yeah. It's kind of a salmon-y, orange, sunset color.
Like on the canvas on the wall there, maybe like the one in the middle?
Yes.
Hmm. Not a huge fan of orange in general, but that shade is fantastic.
Becoming.
Yeah. My new favorite shade of orange.
Likewise.
Next question. What online streaming shows are you watching?
Oh, that's great. I recently got into Blacklist, which is something that I never thought I'd say.
What is that? I'm unfamiliar.
It's about espionage and adventure and action and guns. And it's nothing that I ever thought I'd be watching, but it's suspenseful and I like that. And it's something new. So, beyond that, I usually just stream documentaries. What I binge watched in an entire day and a half was Julie Andrews' Green Room with the Muppets, which was
on Netflix.
Yes. It was a brilliant, I think it's 13 episodes, with guest stars and the Muppets and Julie Andrews and everything wonderful in the world. So I would recommend that. I'm probably going to rewatch that again. And again. Are you...
That's three times?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm going to watch it three times at least. Before it leaves Netflix, of course.
Yeah. Am I...
A Muppet fan, but I wasn't going to ask you a question.
There's probably a way to phrase that in the form of not a question.
Oh. Yeah. What about... No, that's
aggressively just say, like, I can tell that we're both fans of the Muppets, and then I either have to confirm or deny or just awkwardly not acknowledge it.
That's okay. I'll figure you out someday, Christopher Nichols, if that's your real name.
It's not. Because I generally haven't been saying my last name on the podcast, but that's all right. That's what that's what post-production's for. I'll have the intern take it out.
It's a big beep in it. Your secret's safe with me.
And Josh. And Tom. And Sean. And Matt. And Erica.
All the listeners?
Mm-hmm. All the ones that have made themselves known.
There's probably an anonymous group out there. I've listened.
Like the guys with the masks?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, definitely.
We've listened too.
Oh.
Next question, please.
Next question. What is your earliest memory of experiencing comedy?
These are great questions.
There's a lot of them too, so.
Yeah, I'm glad that I wrote out a script with these exact answers, so that's perfect. according to my script, I would say, I'm going to say two. One is when I watched my mother perform when growing up. She was just a fantastic singer and a comedic actress, a lot like Lucille Ball. So watching her perform on stage was very inspiring. I mean, growing up watching I Love Lucy with her and reruns really formed a lot of my comedy, but what inspired me was that. And one time when I was very young, the Scholastic Bookmobile came into town. Are you familiar with the Scholastic Bookmobile?
Oh, yes. The little flyers they would give you ahead of time.
Yes.
Like the multi-page, super thin paper magazines.
Yes. And you could mark them off and order them for those in the studio audience that are, which again, thank you for being here. You guys have been quiet and attentive.
You do not have to acknowledge the intern's presence at all.
Oh, okay.
That's part of his contract.
I thought it was just the intern. That's okay.
Technically a studio audience.
Yeah, that's very true. But to it, just kind of experience that was formidable. That's the right word there.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
My favorite part was always checking off Calvin and Hobbes
mm-hmm.
every time. Different one.
Oh, God, I had a story there, didn't I? So the rest of the story is, I just got really stuck on your intern. We're making eyes at each other. It's awkward.
I said no eye contact.
Let it go.
All right.
I wanted to get a joke book. And my dad was, you know, you can't get a joke book. You need to get National Geographic, which I was a National Geographic subscriber as a child and loved Nat Geo Jr. But I wanted a joke book and he wouldn't let me get it. But I got it anyway when the bookmobile came to town and I had a joke book and then it was fine because I, you know, it wasn't that rebellious, but it was a moment in my life where I was like, someone told me I can't be funny.
I'll show you.
I will use fake jokes to earn my way. And I've done it ever since.
Nice. Thank you for sharing.
Huh.
How did you first get started in improv?
Well, at Aquinas. That was on the improv team. I auditioned for the improv team when I was a freshman, I think, and got in and performed, and they were just becoming solid as a group and learning together. So it was cool to help be a part of that. And then I had done it in places that I lived, and when I got to Grand Rapids, got back into it with no outlet. And I've been doing stuff in Grand Rapids again since.
Where have you lived besides Grand Rapids?
A lot of different places, I guess. I grew up in Ludington, and then, Ohio. I lived near Dayton, Ohio. I did a lot of traveling, so lived kind of like wherever I could.
Nomadically?
Yes, nomadically. And lived in Muskegon for 5 years with AmeriCorps, and then was hired in at a nonprofit, a housing nonprofit there, and then also worked at Muskegon Civic and then Grand Rapids for another 5 years.
Nice.
Yeah. I always have, returned to Ludington as home. That's, my mom is there, and it's where my family grew up. My brothers live all over the place, but we always come back home.
Is Ludington where Miss Lisa's is? The ice cream place?
No, it's House of Flavors is our ice cream place.
Oh.
And that is a staple. I worked there as a soda jerk.
Jerking those sodas?
Jerking those sodas.
Hmm.
Yeah, they're cream.
I can't recall ever having a jerked soda, but it must have happened at some point.
That's what they called it in the 50s, I guess.
Because, like, you have to, like, pull the handle?
Probably. Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah, I guess I've never really...
Look up the origin of that term.
Yeah. Write that down. Got
soda
it.
Jerk? Question mark? All right.
Why don't you just have your intern do that?
That's a very good idea. I'm going to write that down. Intern. Write. Things. Down. Question mark? Yeah. All right. Tell me about your involvement with Dog Story Theater, please.
I run and with Sean Francis under the production of No Outlet, a weekly comedy show called Comedy Outlet Mondays. Comedy Mondays used to run at Dog Story at its old location, I believe, a few years ago.
Dog Story existed in another elsewhere. Physical location.
Another?
Oh.
No, it was actually another metaphysical location. Mm. It was another plane, another realm.
Different dimension.
Different people call it different things. But it existed elsewhere. And Joe Anderson was, the godfather of that community. And then things dispersed. And almost 2 years ago, in May 5th, we were approached, No Outlet, to maybe open it again. And that sounded great. So we hit the ground running. And Com has formed itself ever since. And it's an evolving comedy show, a variety show, an extravaganza. The way that we run the show, we've wanted an open space for people to play and also a space for people to perform. So that idea has stayed, but it's become much more structured and unpredictably predictable. So you're going to get an hour-long show and you're going to get an hour jam. Never know what you're going to get in that time, right?
Oh, yeah.
I don't even know booking it. That's the beauty of it. You never see the same show twice. You might see the same group twice or 15 times, but you never see the same show.
Yeah, I've been... I missed this week's.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I noticed.
But that was the first one I missed in over a year, so...
Hey.
Yeah. Not to toot my own horn, but I rang my own bell a little bit. Yeah. Well, you rang my bell.
I rang your bell.
Instance.
Ring my bell. Ring my bell. Will you play that like when you edit this?
I don't edit it.
Okay.
That's a real song?
That's a real song. I think it might be Blondie or
I ring my
Olivia Newton. I don't know.
Is that a euphemism?
Yeah, probably. Mm. That's how every time when newsflash, when we ring the bell.
That was one of the funniest things when you got the new bell and Sean couldn't ring it. And
immediately.
Yeah.
Newsflash was a fun brainchild too. That came out of, I think we were in a road trip to Ludington as a group, and Nick Milbretz, who is a founding member of No Outlet, and I were talking, just shooting the shit. Can I say shit?
You can say fuck if you want to. I changed the categorization to explicit, so.
Fuck. That was great. But we decided, I mean, he was like, what if we did a news show? And Lizzie Salkowski, who now lives in Chicago, she's also a founding member of No Outlet, did the first few news flashes with me until she moved to Chicago. And then Mike Nichols was my cohort for about probably almost a year. And he wrote as well. And then now Sean Francis is a cohort, co-host, co-anchor. And he writes and I write. Amy Gaskin writes for us. Dominique Dameron writes for us. I'm pretty sure Dave Basie wrote for us a couple weeks ago. So it's fun to have a little team of writers, and Newsflash evolves just like Com has.
Yeah. I always enjoyed Newsflash.
Nice. It's a lot of fun.
Do you know the origin of the name Dog Story Theater?
Yes. It has to do with, there's a play called, I believe, The Zoo Story. And there's, I'm pretty sure it's online, and that's how I remember this story.
On the Dog Story website?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Oh. And then the dog, there's a dog in the play, or there's something, I don't know, it's on the website. But it turned into the Dog Story Theater. And the original people that had to do with it, I can't name any of them except for Amy McFadden. But they, you know, kind of founded it on their own basis of needing a place, needing a space, creative artists getting together. So Dark Story's got a lot of cool roots, and it's got a lot of, it's been passed through a lot of hands. And that's neat.
Hmm. It is neat. What is the history of No Outlet Improv Troupe?
We grew out of, actually, the founding troupe were all Aquinas alumni as well, who were at the Aquinas team, and who, I feel like the college really cherished improv shows, so it was cool to be an improviser at Aquinas, at least in my experience. And then, so I don't think people wanted to let go of that, you know, and you could, you know, while you were studying for an exam and stressing out about college, you could play any character you wanted and be silly and laugh and have people laugh with you. And it was just such a nice, like, man, what if we could do this outside of college and play as adults and imagine and say yes to each other. And they did. And they started kind of performing at a coffee shop that doesn't exist anymore. Urban something. Out on Michigan. And I joined them when I moved to Grand Rapids. I taught at the Civic Theater with another founding member, Mackenzie McElroy, who was just talking about improv one day, and I was like, I'd love to come back and play. So I played with them for 2 weeks, and then they were like, do you want to join? And I said, yes. And then we started doing shows monthly at the coffee shop. We found Dog Story. We started doing seasons. We did a season at Ambrosia Theater.
Over on Diamond and Lake?
Mm-hmm. Across from Enrique Treves in the Blackport building, I think it's called.
Above, like, Global Infusion. And
Yep. Mm-hmm. Right in that vicinity. So we did a season there, and then we did Calm, and then we did Griff.
The Grand Rapids Improv Festival?
That's correct. Mm. So it started as the West Michigan Improv Festival in 2014, and then changed to Grand Rapids Improv Festival 2015 and 2016. And guess what, folks? In October 2017, Griff, hashtag Griff on its way. It's going to be insane this year. Yeah. Your intern's got a light in his eye.
Yeah? We'll talk about this after the show, Bob. I crossed off Let's Talk About Griff, which I had later.
Oh.
I guess I didn't organize my questions well.
I tangent, so if you need to redirect, you can always redirect.
I don't know what that means.
It's a mathematical term, a tangent.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay. I meant redirect.
Oh. That's a theater term.
Oh, what does it mean? I have no theater background at all.
just simple, don't got any theater background.
Yep.
I'm
ignorant.
I don't know. No, redirect things. You can. I work with kids and have to redirect all the time. Yeah. That's all.
Like, okay.
Yeah. Because I'll just talk. What is this, a podcast?
Yeah. With no time limit, so we can go on.
I brought my sleeping gear too, which I'm really excited about, as long as you have popcorn.
I have popcorn.
Cool.
I have a hammock if you want to pop up a hammock and.
Absolutely.
Yeah. That's good for naps. And what is the origin of the name No Outlet?
That I can't tell you.
Hmm.
That's confidential information.
Oh, okay.
Hmm. Yeah, not that I can't tell you. I can't tell you.
Oh, there was a raised eyebrow that conveyed a lot of meaning there, so.
It was my left, so you know it's real.
It was. It was my right.
You're right. You are right.
What other improv troupes have you been in?
I used to mess around with some people in Muskegon. We never really officially came together. I messed around with some people in Ludington. Then never really came together, but the official improv troupe that I've been working with is the House Troupe of Funny Girls as well, which is a brilliant group of human beings that I'm honored to share the stage with. I'm not really that emotional. I'm just acting.
Oh.
But they make me feel like I want to act all the time.
Me too.
Mm-hmm.
It's quite inspirational. Next question. How much wood would a woodchuck chuck if a woodchuck could chuck wood?
Okay. Probably because I can chuck wood too.
Mm.
And so my answer is when I need to. And so, and however much I need to in that circumstance. So I'm going to say that woodchuck, when they need to chuck wood, it's not a question of if they could chuck wood, because they can. They're a woodchuck. And it's not a question of how much. It's what's the need, you know. And then you can gauge it from there.
Hmm. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
What are some of your favorite comedy movies?
I love the movie Airplane. I love the movie Airplane.
Roger that.
Yeah. And what's a vector, Victor? I love that movie. It is a brilliant, wonderful, again, one of those first, you know, introductions to spoofs and parodies and satire, and they did it all. It was, you know, non sequiturs left and right and just really fun things. I also really enjoy Clue the movie because it's so dopey and doopy. And Christopher Guest movies. So, this is Spinal Tap. I don't think he directed that one, but Waiting for Guffman, Best in Show, A Mighty Wind.
Ascots?
Yes. Yes. The brand new one. Parker Posey is one of my favorite. And Catherine O'Hara. Just the cast and how he reuses them and how they reuse characters or bring new things back. I just love Christopher Guest movies. I love that wit and that deep character work and that truth. I think that's cool.
I think people named Christopher are generally...
They're neat. They're neat people.
Pretty good.
Yeah.
What are some of your favorite comedic television shows?
I would have to say that The Precipice... I'm trying to use big words in this podcast to make people think that I'm smarter. Of my TV comedy inspiration was NBC Thursday nights in the late 90s, early 2000s, and like into 2000s. Will and Grace, which was, for so many reasons, such a important show in my life for the comedy and for the context.
Chuck Lorre is a genius.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Are you a fan of The Big Bang Theory?
I haven't watched a lot of it, but am a fan of when I do. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Just good, fast, quick, and structured and good humor. And then, you know, there was Friends and their end, which was okay. I couldn't relate a lot because I was like, what? You're 20-something in New York and struggling to have an apartment. I'm 13 and liking this gay couple over here. Like, that's cool. But I just loved Thursdays on NBC. I just remember getting with friends and like laughing and enjoying that. I like classic comedies, The Carol Burnett Show and The Muppets. I love Lucy, Mary Tyler Moore. I don't watch a lot of comedy TV shows, though, because I watch so many classic comedy TV shows. So my palate is different. Yeah, my palate is different, which doesn't say, you know, it's higher or lower than somebody else's, but it's just different.
Yeah, that's fair. Before I move on.
Yes.
Have you watched Rick and Morty at all?
No.
Ooh. It's a hard sci-fi cartoon from Dan Harmon of Community fame. It's my favorite show on television right now.
Yeah.
The season 3 is coming out soon. But it's very irreverent. Mm-hmm. It deals with a lot of kind of existential issues.
Rick and Morty. I've heard of it.
Yeah, it's definitely worth checking out.
Yeah. And I have enjoyed, like, I remember watching The Simpsons when I was a kid and being like, this is great.
Oh, yeah.
They are doing parody, but it's something that I wasn't supposed to watch.
Yeah.
So, same with South Park.
Ooh, that's like
it. Matt Stone and Trey Parker are very smart and very...
They're geniuses.
Cunning and very... They are. And... Not everything they do at South Park always hits with me, but I will keep watching it because what they do that hits with me, they do right.
Yeah.
Same with Orgasmo, their movie. Same with
baseball.
Baseball. Same with the Book of Mormon.
Oh, that was so good.
I haven't seen it, but the soundtrack and just it's the premise. It's brave, and it's also what people would call maybe a lowbrow sometimes of, you know, they're going to the most universal punchline of Carmen is farting and we're laughing at it. But for some reason we're like, yeah, there's the rest of the show has such a statement that, and they do it so irreverently that it's,
yeah,
okay. It's same with Always Sunny. Oh. I love Always Sunny. I'm watching it again for the third time. It's irreverent, and I hate laughing at it. But there's something that they're doing right, and they're poking fun of the people that are like that.
Yeah.
And explaining it instead of just being like that.
It's very not sugar-coated.
Right.
They don't play it safe.
They're the worst kind of people, but the best things and lessons come from it. I also really like the worst show ever, as far as context and homophobia and racism and everything that you can deal with and you do it irreverently, is Strangers with Candy, which was Amy Sedaris, Dave Sedaris' sister, the author, his sister, who's also an author and an actress, which is very great, plays this 40-year-old user, boozer, and loser who goes back to high school and deals with, it's a parody of after-school programs. So she deals with drugs, and she deals with, you know, the school play, and she deals with eating disorders and everything that you do in an after-school special from the 80s and 90s. Stephen Colbert is in it. He plays one of the professors, a closeted gay professor. I can't say enough about Strangers with Candy. It's probably on Comedy Central somewhere. But only a few people, my friend Jolene and my brothers, all know about it, and nobody else. But you gotta check it out. Stephen Colbert is brilliant in it.
He's one of my heroes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I used to watch a lot of comedy. I guess I just don't have time for it because I'm watching it live, yeah. You know?
That's fair. Who are some of your favorite comedians?
I think probably collectively the people I've mentioned in TV shows and movies. I going back would be definitely Lucille Ball, Wanda Sykes in the 90s said some real shit, and I was young, but I understood it for what it was, and that was intriguing. I'm trying to think of other really. I like watching Tina Fey and Amy Poehler. Like watching that camaraderie. I really like what is his name? Steve Martin.
Oh yeah.
He is a brilliant playwright. The Underpants is one of the funniest, you know, short plays I've ever read. By Steve, and he's a musician.
Plays the banjo.
Mm-hmm. He's great. I really enjoyed Steve Martin. You know, the entire cast of Will and Grace, I'll always come back to Will and Grace. Megan Mullally and...
Who's married to Ron Swanson.
Who's married to Ron Swanson.
So lucky.
Tammy. I love Parks and Rec.
Very funny show.
Yeah. It's hard because, I mean, if you catch me tomorrow, I'm going to say, you know, 10 different comedians that also inspire me, you know. Yeah.
All right. Did you need another drink?
I do. I need another beverage.
All right. Well, I will ask you this and then go get the beverages, since I did not include that in the intern's job description, so
they would be clueless as to how even what a refrigerator is.
I don't
Bob
think he's of legal drinking age.
Yeah,
so
he looks small. He's been crawling around your apartment.
Legally, your studio, I can't ask me. Their age.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. So yeah, if you could please tell me about your experience with Funny Girls. And then before, did you want one of these zombie dusts?
Yeah.
Okay.
That is, will you do a commercial for that?
I am currently drinking a zombie dust from Three Floyds Brewery in Indiana, Munster, Indiana. Unfortunately, they don't distribute to Michigan, even though it has a Michigan deposit on it. Maybe they did start distributing to Michigan. I haven't seen it in town, at least. This is a pale ale, 12 fluid ounces, 355 milliliters. It's hoppy and floral and fruity. Oh, what does it say? This intensely hopped and gushing undead pale ale.
Gushing.
Gushing.
Yes.
It says that.
Yeah, no, that's a perfect... It's a perfect adjective and verb for that.
This gushing undead pale ale will be one's only respite? Respite?
Respite.
Respite. After the zombie apocalypse.
Oh.
Created with our marvelous friends in the comic industry. Art by Tim Seeley.
And the art is quite appealing.
It's like a foil label.
It's kind of iridescent foily and it's
iridescent, yes.
Yes, and it's got appears to be a zombie king, perhaps. He's wearing a cape.
And it's closed with bat wings.
Mm.
And they make another beer called Alpha King, and they collaborated with some comic book artists to make a comic book called Alpha King, which is currently in publication. It's a 5-issue run.
Mm-hmm.
3 are out so far, and it's kind of like a dark fantasy, similar art style, like orcs and skeletons, and there's titties, which is offensive to some people. Blood and guts, and
interesting.
Yeah,
Jinx.
Oh, I
owe me a beer.
All right.
Well, it's from Munster, Indiana.
Munster, yeah.
Well, you do like that, I'm gonna hum the Munsters theme song. Okay.
Oh. Okay, and then, will that take long enough for me to...
Oh, yeah. Okay. I'll do it on repeat, and then I'll answer your question.
Oh. That's fair.
Hmm.
Okay.
Do 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 I have my beer. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that is gushing. That is delicious.
Yeah. It's fresh.
Thank you, Three Floyds. Can you tag them in this podcast?
Hashtag Three Floyds?
Yeah.
I don't know if we have the licensing for that.
Oh.
I'll look into it.
Well, it's good.
It's very good.
Imported from Indiana, you said?
Legally. Of course.
Of course.
Not smuggled across
like
the border.
Like fireworks.
And untaxed cigarettes. Yeah. I think I forgot something.
Do 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 do.
I was going to mention that Oberon is coming out on Monday.
Heard that. I don't like a lot of wheat beers.
Mm.
I'm not a huge Belgium brewed kind of person. I don't like the bubblegummy things. I like it to be gushing.
Spilt all over the floor.
I just literally gushed my beer.
That's your loss.
That is truly my loss. I don't get another. That's to be expected, though. My spilling.
Oh.
Yeah, that's
people. My production manager did not inform me of that ahead of time. So
no, that's okay. But your intern's literally just standing and looking. So I'm going to clean this up a little bit.
Way to go, Bob.
But I'm not a huge Oberon fan, is what that was all about.
That's fair. Every style has its fans and...
But it's exciting.
Yeah, like, some years are better than others. I feel like last year's was really good. But it's also inconsistent in, like, the batches, because I had a couple that were really good, like, nice and cloudy and a lot of flavor. Other ones that were really clear and just kind of meh.
Dismal.
Yeah, I think that's a fair adjective. The trash is in the tall cupboard at the end.
Thanks. I actually spilled a beer. This is not improv. This is real life. I will improv spill a beer though later.
Oh.
You know, you can see the difference.
Yeah, so Aaron is disposing of the paper towels from the spilt beer at the moment. And then we'll move on to some further questions in the interview.
Okay.
Are we all right?
I feel like we're safe.
Okay.
Back on a coaster. Coasting.
It might be more stable without the coaster. Because they're kind of elevated. I don't know.
No, I just whacked it off the table. It wasn't...
You did.
Yeah, there was no...
I saw you whacking
fault.
It.
Fault. It was not... There's no fault but mine.
It's partially my fault for the table placement, I feel.
Yeah. And we're back from our beer break. Thankfully, it was only less than a quarter, so we're good to go.
Yeah, that was like 2 ounces, I would say. Aaron, if you wouldn't mind, could you please tell me about your experience with the improv troupe Funny Girls?
Yes, I wouldn't mind at all. I love that they are not just an improv troupe, but a sketch comedy group, a collective of stand-up comedians, people who do film and marketing and outreach, and the acting and everything kind of comes together in one group. And tell you about my experience with it? Is that the question?
Yeah.
My experience has been great. We're in our second year. We've been a year strong. And we've seen different people come in and out. We've seen the group evolve into, we have a board, we have committees, we have monthly shows, we do monthly workshops, we do monthly open mic nights. But that's come at a lot of trial and error, you know, and it's going to change again, inevitably. But we see it changing together, and we grow together. And that's really unique about working with a collective as opposed to just working alone.
Is it a democracy?
It is. It's a democracy. Yep, so we voted for our board, and we vote every 6 months. Though committees are volunteer. And we have a structure of tiers of involvement. So tier one funny girls are any funny girl that wants to
Your hand
support.
Gesture is making me a little
Oh God, I'm nervous. Beer. I'm by the beer again. I am so full of
expressive.
Gesture. Yes, I'm expressive. So tier one is just a group of whomever who wants to support, you know, the Funny Girls mission. Tier two are individuals that will come to rehearsals and work toward performance level. And then tier three are our Funny Girls who are committed to what Funny Girls is. They take time out of their week for rehearsal and for meetings. And organize a lot of the events and workshops. It's not a well-oiled machine yet, but it's a fierce machine, and we are fixing it together along the way. It's cool that everyone plays a different part as well. Yeah, so a little inner working. When we're on stage, though, it's flawless. You can't even tell we have any system. It just looks very natural, I'm sure.
I've always enjoyed the shows.
Thank you. We have fun.
Do you feel that explicitly segregating comedy troupes by gender might be sexist?
I can see why that would be perceived. And with that, it is up to, you know, a person's own perception based on their background, values, and beliefs. My background, values, and beliefs have taught me that a lot of times, as females, we don't have a lot of safe spaces where we feel like we can. We have locker rooms, we have sleepovers, we have personal time together, but in a public setting, it's hard to feel safe historically. Whether it's verbally safe or physically safe, that's the reality. So to have a space where a group who has not really ever had that kind of space before doesn't have to have the pressure of having males there is important. And that's, again, why we say self-identified female, because we... Ginger Ambrosia, who is a drag queen, is featuring at our next show. So we'll have the male Nathan at our rehearsals. But we've all agreed on that as a group. Would I find an all male group who wouldn't allow females on sexist? I personally would. I would listen to their reasons. But in the end, the reason Funny Girls started was because most of the groups in Grand Rapids had been all male, or primarily male. So, It's a long answer, and it's not...
No, it's a good answer.
It's going to be a different answer for everyone. I'm not saying that's... Again, it's a palette, it's a different experience. My experience is much different, But it's something Funny Girls have talked about in our meetings. Do we include males? Do we not? In our space, we'd like that to be open to any female.
What about feminists? If you say self-identified feminists,
yeah, would that be... males who are self-identified feminists? Well, and so that discussion is, it's continuously... but we are working with a differentiation between Funny Girls shows and projects. So there's a Funny Girls show, it's Funny Girls. If it's a project or if it's a Funny Girls Presents, hopefully we can start inviting that. We just have to make sure. We would never sacrifice one Funny Girls safety for the sake of bringing in somebody else.
All right. That's fair.
Yeah.
What?
Okay. But just in general, as it stands, I wouldn't see the Grand Rapids community ever just saying, this is an all-boys club. It's okay to have a specific group, and we're exploring options as to how to open that up. Yeah.
All right. Now, what motivates you to express yourself creatively and to build a community around that interest?
Okay, so what motivates me? And what motivates me also to motivate others or build a community Cool. I think my family has always motivated me. If you're not the loudest and funniest at the table, you know, the next sibling will be, or my mom would be. And it was never about competition being louder or funnier. It was just, that's what we were. And that was good. That felt good. Whether it was a shit day at school or a heartbreak or a medical emergency or, you know, my parents splitting up, we laughed around the dinner table, and it was okay. You know, things are okay because in the present we're laughing. So I think that's something that super inspired me. And the fact that it was a family and I surround myself. Because when you're laughing alone, it reminds me of that song, like, I started a joke and it had the whole world crying. Like, if you're just trying to joke it, just within, it's hard. You know, we can deal with pain ourselves. It's hard to share somebody else's pain. They have their own experience. And even if you can relate here and there, that, you know, you can't completely share that experience. But I think laughter and joy, I think you can share that with somebody else. This is funny. Somebody slipping on a banana peel, that's funny. This is a pun. I get it and you get it. That's funny. We are on the same level of empathy and connection. And so when I find people that can laugh with me or pretend with me, that is also fulfilling to me, and it's also fulfilling to know that it's fulfilling to them. So when I meet on Sundays with funny girls, we deal with some heavy issues, but we also can laugh about them at the end. At Calm, we listen to different backgrounds and we try different games and we bring new people up on stage, and there's new audience members all the time, and what we're doing is we're just laughing together and pretending together. And that's not just an empty escape from the world, from everything that's happening. It's a way to deal with it. You know, you can empty escape, drink things away. But if you empty escape, drink drunk conversation, then you're actually dealing with some things, right? If you're just laughing for no reason, that's okay too, but usually there's something else we're talking about in those scenes. So yeah, I guess that's enough to inspire me to want to just keep doing this.
Thank you.
Yeah.
What is the best gift that you have ever received?
I want to break this up into my adult life and my adolescent life, because I think gifts are different
mm-hmm.
when you're a kid and when you're an adult. So when I was a kid, we had a house. My grandma had a house on Lake Michigan. My head was always in the clouds, figuratively and literally. Like, I was just always just so spacey, up in space, day or night. Still am. But my parents got me a powered parachute ride for my 13th birthday, I think. So you go up in this go-kart that's powered by a fan and a parachute that shoots behind it. But it used to go by our house, you know, in the summer, and it was just a guy who privately owned it. And they hooked it up, so I got a ride around. So I came across, you know, the front deck, across over the lake, and waved at my family. And that was really meaningful, because that's when money started getting tight. So it was like, that was a really cool, you know, way to physically and metaphysically get away for a minute. My darling love, Jenna, when we first met, it was at a summer camp at the Civic Theater. And the theme had been the history of Michigan was the play. And we were just like flirting, and I was just falling in love with her and couldn't tell her and didn't know how she felt. And so it was this like summer of like confusing just love. And I, at the end of the summer, wanted to get her a gift to, you know, as a colleague, for teaching with me. And she, unbeknownst to me, also got me a gift. And when we opened the gifts, I had painted her, a small canvas of Michigan. And she made me a map to put on my map wall of Michigan. So we had both essentially made each other the same kind of gift. Which I always thought the gift of the Magi was a beautiful story, but this was, in my mind, I was like, the same gift? We didn't have to sacrifice anything? We can have two of it? I was like, that's meant to be. You know, there's nothing tragic about it, so I didn't go there too. Yeah.
Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah.
Who are your role models?
I have so many. I'm going to try to simplify the answer. My mom taught me how to love unconditionally. She raised myself and three brothers, who are all loving, wonderful people. I'm calling myself a wonderful person right now. In a good situation where they feel happy, and all coincidentally gay. So she raised a whole horde of people who not only loved themselves but loved others, and that she did it right. So every time I approach anybody, even with, you know, the space I have, the fuse box, my mom's house was always open. We would have runaways come through. We'd have people that needed some time away. We'd have friends whenever. We'd sit around the piano. My mom would play music. It was just an open house of what you needed, you could get there. And so when I look on where I'm at right now, I'm like, wow, that comes from where my mom was of this. She's known in our entire town as Mama Shar. She's known as this human that gives selflessly, sometimes to a flaw. And that's real too. That's something I also struggle with, but it's a beautiful thing. So she's very much a role model. There are people in Grand Rapids that are role models to me. Amy Gaskin is on another level of commitment and comedy. I look up to our mayor, Rosalind Bliss, who's the first female mayor of Grand Rapids, who's also such an advocate for our Heartside neighbors and for the LGBTQ community and for our immigrants, and makes public statements about that's what she's about in Grand Rapids. We're a green city in 2020, so she like gives a shit about environment things. It's cool to see local leaders.
We're legalizing weed in 2020.
That's what's up. I can only hope. But just there are so many, you know, local people that are important to me as well. And then, so then if we had to go, you know, a quintessential national celebrity role model, I would say Carol Burnett. Comedy, produced her own show, didn't give a fuck about what others thought.
Let's talk about the fuse box.
Do let's.
That's all I have.
Oh.
That, yeah.
So, the fuse box is a creative space on the Avenue for the Arts. It's a place where we rehearse comedy, where we rehearse plays, where we do full-length productions. Funny Girls performs there. It's a hybrid between the Lamplight Festival and a show at Doc Story. Are you familiar with Lamplight Festival?
No, what is that?
It's an annual festival in Easttown that you tour living rooms and local artists, and like cool local artists too, like good well-known local bands play around. So, but they're just living rooms, and legit, you know, you are packed in there with as many people as you can. The Dog Story Theater is more of a official venue where you can really put on a really great production and build a set. The Fuse Box is in between there. It's a great rehearsal space. It's a great underground comedy space. We've done, Funny Girls has performed there. Grand Rapids Improv Festival has held events there. Ladyfest GR has held events there 2 years in a row. We've done the Vagina Monologues there and A Halloween Story, two full-length productions. So it's a playground.
And you're currently doing a GoFundMe?
Yes, I am. Yeah, absolutely. So it's actually from the beginning of the Fuse Box, and it is a community space, but an expensive space. So between rent and lights and gas is one thing, but you know, soap and paper towels and toilet paper. And because it's such a space that people use, everybody has been so generous in giving to that space, which has been fantastic. And the Funny Girls especially, they set me up with another account. I can't remember what it's called. Patreon?
Yep.
Where you can give monthly, which has been fantastic. And then the Funny Girl, you know, if you use the space, you pay for it. But you're paying for the actual space to keep it open every month. And that's bare minimum. So the cost and the burden is high, but reward.
They could go to GoFundMe.com/... Something.
Probably the Fuse Box.
The Fuse Box.
Yeah. You can check it out on Facebook and on it's got a Weebly site. The Fuse Box GR. So yeah.
Or Patreon.
Which is always an awesome thing. But I took a cue from a brilliant artist next door, Hugo Claudin, who owns the Mexican Sans Fronteras, who has been running a wonderful production and a lot of events over next door. So he's my next door neighbor. He's a part of a lot of musical groups in Grand Rapids. Just below us is the Music and Movement Building, which is Corey Ruffin, who does a lot of the Super Happy Fun Time burlesque shows. He did Art Prize the Musical a couple years ago. So that's just below me. So these spaces are just places of where brilliant things are coming out of. And they're not huge headlining. It's not, you know, Monroe, the 20 or live 20 Monroe or whatever. And yeah, it's not
the Bob.
And it's not even a pyramid scheme, which is a beautiful place. I love everything that goes on there. It's just something, they're just something different. And I'm proud to be a part of that and to have created a small theatrical space. Couldn't even call it a theater. It's a theatrical space. So, the Fuse Box.
All right. What is punching up and punching down? You say that at Dog Story, but I don't really understand what it means.
Cool. In short, which I always say, but it always goes long. You, in a joke, and everything I'm saying, I'm doing a disclaimer of personal opinion, or this is the way I've found it to be, or something I've discovered, is that for me to make a joke work personally, I need to hit the oppressor and not the oppressed. So if you're going to deal with a homophobic joke, or do a sketch about homophobia, it can't be a homophobic sketch. It needs to be a sketch about homophobia. You need to justify why you're saying that. So these irreverent shows like Always Sunny, they learn a lesson, or you see that lesson happen, or you see how wrong it is, even if the main characters are doing it, right?
And they never get better.
They never get better. Right, but you also like can recognize that, like, yes. But if you make fun of the oppressor and not the oppressed, you can make a joke about Hitler, and you can't make a joke. You know, I mean, you can, but it's seen as distasteful to make a joke about, you know, the Holocaust. You can make a joke about the Confederate flag, but you can't make a joke about that targets gay people, but you can target the people that target. Does that make sense? And it's not a can and can't. I'm just saying that's what either punching up or punching down is. It's a gray world. I think an important part of life, and if comedy is part of your life, an important part is to listen. So I've made plenty of written sketches or done this or that, that somebody checks me on and is like, actually, I'm offended by this, or I would find this offensive. And so I think twice about it. Not all comedians do that. Louis C.K. doesn't do that. He goes after everyone. But he does it, and he does it in a way that you're learning from it. You're not just laughing at it. Comedy is a tool, and you can use it just like a hammer. You can bludgeon someone with it and make the hurt worse, or you can use it to build something different. And it's subjective. It's subjective. It's a palette. It's what one person finds offensive, 20 other people might not. But is it always worth going for the 20 other laughs? Or is it worth going for something that is universal? I don't know.
In comedy, can you be universal? Like, won't there always be someone on the other side?
Absolutely. And that's why I just stick with puns, Chris. Because I'm too scared to go anywhere else. a pun's universal, everyone. Take note. But there are universal forms of comedy. There are also forms of comedy that will make you think. There are forms of entertainment. It's an art. It's an art. It's an art. There's not a science to it. There's not a math to it. It's not an equation. It's an art form. And the more you see it that way, I appreciate anyone that does comedy as an art. Do I always laugh at it? Do I always want to stay and stare at a picture for a while? No, sometimes I walk right past a picture or a sculpture. It doesn't catch my attention. I don't like it. It's different from what I would like. Is it not comedy? Is it not art? No, of course it's comedy. I'm just not laughing.
All right. How do we get Mike Nichols back into comedy?
We have to throw 7 welcome back shows. Because, and here's my math with this, he had 7 going away shows. So you can't expect, you know, we need to throw some parties.
We should get started on that then, I think.
Bob?
Don't acknowledge him, please. He already has enough ego problems.
The intern. Yeah, I say let's start at the fuse box.
Excellent. Next question. What is love?
Love is I'm someone that's not afraid of love, so I'm going to speak of love differently than people that are afraid of love or who are hurt, have been hurt by love recently or in the past. I'm speaking of love as my own, how I perceive love. But how I perceive love is like anything and everything that gives me a feeling. So if I walk by something, a crumpled newspaper on the ground, and I just walk by it, and I don't feel anything about it, it's just there in my mind, whatever. It's just like part of my subconscious, or, you know, what is that when you blink and when you breathe? What is that?
Subconscious?
Is it subconscious? Yeah. That function, if it's just part of that function, but when I can stop and look at it and be like, oh, man. The newspaper looks interesting in the snow. That's a piece of love. Of like, I'm recognizing something as it is instead of just walking by it. So you can love a community. You can love a book. You can love a person. You can love a family member. You can love, hopefully, yourself. You can love a plant. You can love a cat or a dog. You can love someone you hate because there's a feeling there. There's, why do you care about them? Because it's love. Why do you care negatively about them? Probably because there's something you relate with there, whether it's what you love in yourself or love in them, but can't. So for me, love is just something that matters.
Nice. What are some of your favorite restaurants in Grand Rapids, and what do you like to order there?
You need a new podcast for this, Chris.
Just for food?
Just for Grand Rapids food. I love, I'm using this correctly.
Capital L?
Cursive capital L. Loop-de-loop L.
Wow.
Terra GR.
Okay.
I've never been disappointed with a plate or a cocktail there.
I've heard they have a very good happy hour.
Yeah. Yeah. You can get like a cheap pizza and really good drink specials there. And it's like from 3 to 6 or something. So it's like actually, you know, doable. You've got time to get there. And it depends on the time of day. So for brunch, I'd say Sanchez. Speakeasy has a really good brunch, and Sundance has a pretty decent brunch too, but Sanchez for sure is my number one. West Sider Cafe is also really good.
Is that on the east side?
Yeah, the far east.
Far east, like out in Lowell?
Yeah, no, it's definitely on the west side.
Oh.
West Sider Cafe is if you take... where Bridge meets Stocking, and you go off and like new
by Harmony Hall.
The new Harmony Hall, yeah, is there, mm-hmm. And you head that way. West Sider's great. Speaking of Harmony,
Blue Dog in Monarchs Club.
Yeah, and you keep going.
Oh, past mm-hmm. Holiday Bar.
Mm-hmm. Yep, it's really just for brunch, maybe, but it's Polish. Mm. It's like awesome
pierogies.
Yeah, awesome, good. Polish food and eggs benny. Their eggs benny there is really good. Mm. I'm kind of an eggs benedict connoisseur, so I'm going by for brunch in order of eggs benedict.
It's hard to do a good hollandaise.
Yeah, it is. It is. It is. It is. And then pizza, of course, Harmony. I love
in East Town.
Mm-hmm. And their beer is great too. I love. Oh, there's so many good. There's so many good places in Grand Rapids. Mm-hmm. I really enjoy Little Africa. I think that when I want the things I crave the most are Little Africa and right next door to it, Curry Kitchen.
Oh yeah,
that was good.
Went to Little Africa yesterday with Josh Heller. Sorry, Josh. Josh. Like, I had agreed to it, and then I realized that I had lunch at like 2 p.m. And Josh wanted to go at 6 because of some mysterious goings on in this part of town. Oh. Something to... I'm not going to say it out loud on the podcast, but yeah, pay attention to what's going on there.
Ooh.
I think it's going to be exciting.
Nice.
Yeah. So then I canceled.
You missed out on Little Africa, man.
Yeah. We're rescheduling, though, because yeah. I do really want to try it. It sounds amazing. Kristen highly recommended it.
Kristen Hirsch? Yes. I was just going to say, Kristen Hirsch and I meet up there. That's our spot. You know, it's just such good food. It's just, and just authentic and, yeah, go there. Experience it. Mm-hmm.
I'm looking forward to that. I also want to try Luna Taqueria.
I was just talking about that tonight, too. Their tacos, they do like 3 tacos for like maybe $12 and 2 for $8, which is a fantastic deal.
It's 3 for 10.
Is it?
That's what I saw online.
Go with that for sure. But they have these fantastic, just real, corn tortilla.
I believe it's pronounced tortilla.
Tortilla, thank you. Mm. Tortilla tacos. And their mezcal. What do I get there?
That's like tequila?
Mm-hmm. They have like some smoky mezcal drink that is fantastic. And everyone needs to try. Everyone.
Even people in the program?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm.
Well, I don't want to pressure anybody, so just get a virgin one, but they're good.
Have you tried the Lazy Susan in Standale?
No.
That would be my recommendation.
All right.
I can't speak highly enough. It's the former head chef from Grove.
Yeah,
opened cool. his own restaurant last summer.
Nice.
In Standale on Wilson Avenue.
Okay.
Wilson something.
Yeah. Yum.
It's fantastic.
I'll have to go there. Lazy Susan.
You might want to utilize that notepad.
Well, I'm gonna hope that Jenna, my dearest loving partner, writes these things down or will be listening to this. She actually keeps lists of restaurants that we talk about. To go to, and then she'll cross them out, which is fantastic to have because, you know, we are both like, you know, go-to Curry Kitchen people, but if you have a crave for something different, she's got a whole list of places to try. Ooh. Yeah.
Have you been to Taqueria San Jose on Division?
No.
What about Tacos El Cunado on Burton?
Yes.
Just east of 131?
Yes.
What about the one on Granville by Chicago Drive?
No.
Oh.
I'm feeling so much pressure. This is all taco pressure, too, which I'm usually like a connoisseur of tacos. Am I right?
I also enjoy tacos all over the state, actually, because I travel a lot for my job.
For tacos? Is your job tacos?
A large component of my job is tacos, yeah.
That's cool. You're a mystery to me, and I like it.
If you're in Holland, El Huaracha,
mm-hmm.
fantastic tacos. If you're in Grand Haven, Arturo's Tacos.
Okay.
Super good.
Or Piranha's Pups.
If you want.
I don't. But that's
hot dogs. Yeah. If you're in Battle Creek, Torti Taco, they're $2.
Okay.
Unless you get the Lengua, which is, I think, $2.25. But fantastic tacos. And they have a salsa bar that's got like 12 salsas.
Damn, maybe that more. Sounds great. I got to get you this place to, in Hart. So I grew up in Ludington, Pentwater area, but then neighbors to Pentwater, there's a grocery store. There's not one in Pentwater, but there's one in Hart. So the grocery store in Hart, kind of near there, is an amazing taco place. I can't remember what it is, so this story is irrelevant. But look up great tacos in Hart, and you will not be disappointed.
If I'm ever out that way, I will look for tacos.
Yeah.
And if you're ever up near Traverse City,
it's where my brother and his partner live.
Sutton's Bay.
Okay.
There's a brewery called Hoplot, which makes fantastic IPAs.
I have been there.
Did you have their tacos? The tacos are insane.
My partner and I had tacos and I think some beef brisket as well, because they have an open grill outside with barbecue sauce that they just like slather the shit out of it. I love Hoplot. We were there, and everyone like sits at those community tables. We were there, and there were these small children running through hop fields. Well, I would say hop fields. It's a, you know, kind of decorated tall vine, a few layers deep. But these kids are like running through it, and like, I was like, this is what I want my childhood to be. This is beautiful, just running through hops. I mean, it's what my adulthood basically is.
It's very German.
Yeah.
In a good way, though.
That is true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We already covered Let's Talk About Griff a little bit, unless there's anything else you want to mention upcoming.
Griff? I'll get you the dates, but it's going to be... So, in 2014, West Michigan Improv Festival was less than 10 groups. And then 2015, the first Grand Rapids Improv Festival, the second festival, but first of its name. Grand Rapids Improv Festival, first of its name. It's a Game of Thrones reference. We had 20 or so troops, and then last year we had like 60 some, so I can't wait to see what happens this year. And yeah, I'm gonna make it happen.
Excellent. I look forward to that.
Yes.
Let's talk about Laugh Fest,
yeah,
which has recently concluded for this year.
Mm-hmm. That was it?
Yeah. That is right. Like a prompt, I guess. I don't know.
I like events like Laugh Fest because they do highlight local comedians. I just don't think that people think that local comedians exist every day of the week. It's kind of like Art Prize, you know, like our local artists are here all the time and are fantastic. And then, you know, during Art Prize, they kind of get snuffed, but the rest of us get to enjoy them all year round. The comedians in this community, and I'm, you know, not just stand up, this is improv, this is sketch, this is music and what have you. They were strong this year. And the free shows made it so that there were so many people, and, you know, there were sold out shows and turning people away, and
I got turned away.
Yeah.
From the Friday Funny Girls.
Oh, Alexander Hamilton show. I saw that.
Yeah. Joe Anderson himself turned me away.
Yeah. Paul Brand got turned away. And Paul? Amanda's in it. Yeah.
No.
People.
I'm sorry, Paul, in case you ever listen to this. Paul's like one of my favorites.
Yeah. And that's cool, though. That's like, I mean, that's, it sucks, but it's also great that the need is there, but now we need to meet that need of like, okay, these headlining acts can get these, you know, headlining shows and are able to be paid, and how can we make that happen for our community too? But the exposure is, you know, almost priceless, and the amount of new people at Funny Girls, we always have a great following of, you know, fans, and then we have a few new people, but this show was almost all new people who had heard about Funny Girls from Laugh Fest. So that exposure is so great and important. It was a great experience altogether. Just looking forward to growth. And, you know, I love when festivals and when events and yearly things or weekly things like Calm, when they keep growing and you listen to people and you work together to make something new happen.
Nice. Yeah.
I kind of feel like this question should have been higher up in the order, but what is the role of ego in comedy?
Coming from a performance arts background, first, before comedy, I think the role of ego, much like any thing universally, it needs to be balanced. You need to have pride in your work and to stand by your work. You also need to be able to humble yourself and listen to direction and what other people are saying. You also can't compromise what you think and believe, but you can learn new things about it and learn empathy of others. So your ego needs to be present. You can't completely lose your ego lose your ego when you are becoming a spiritual leader, or when you do a lot of non-entertainment pieces. And honestly, some of the best entertainers I've seen balance it well. But some really good entertainers have a really big ego, but they're still great actors. And some really good entertainers have kind of grounded ego, and they've shed a lot of it, but they're still really great actors. But I think the best have that balance. No one's gonna want to work with you if you're an asshole. If you're a talented asshole, maybe, but if you're an asshole, no one's gonna want to work with you. No one's gonna want to work with you if you don't really assert yourself or believe in yourself either. So from the performance arts aspect, it's got to be a balance. In comedy, I feel like you probably need to have a little more of an ego in general, for stand-up especially. In improv and sketch, you should probably check it, just because you're playing another character. You're not playing yourself anymore. In stand-up, you're playing a version of yourself, but it's still yourself. You know, like, great stand-up comedian. Like, if you meet Amy Schumer, I'm sure she's not always on all the time as a comedic character. She might have some real, you know, like, if you're just chilling with her friends, like, every time we see her, it's in the capacity of an interview or a show or a stand-up special. And in those, you're supposed to play a character. Even in stand-up, you play a character. But there's got to be some, like, realness to that human being, maybe, right? You never know. But that ego as a stand-up performer probably has to be there a little more prevalent. I'm assuming. I'm not much of a stand-up comedian. I haven't really dabbled much.
Have you dabbled?
I have. Not much. I'm opening the Funny Girls show coming up, so.
Which is March 29th?
Yes, at 8 o'clock.
At the Fuse Box.
That's right. You can buy tickets ahead of time.
With Ginger Ambrosia?
Yeah. famous Grand Rapids drag queen and Miss Advocate 2016, Ginger Ambrosia, who has a great ego. Ginger does. Absolutely. But you know what I'm saying? Like, you have, when you're in a sketch and when you're in improv, you're playing somebody different than yourself. So you have to lose. You might have an ego as a character. And I guess I'm having a hard time differentiating stage presence and ego, because stage presence and ego are two different things. But if you're jumping into a scene in improv, for example, and you know more than everyone else in that scene, you're jumping in that scene for a wrong reason. If you're jumping in the scene because it could add positively and you're supporting the other actors, then it's a go. But if you're jumping in with ego in improv, it's almost impossible to make it work. Stand-up's different.
Thank you.
Yeah.
What do you love the most about performing comedy?
Sharing laughter and also laughing at the truth.
Thank you. If you could spend time with one comedian, living or dead, who would it be and why?
It's really hard.
That's what she said.
Hey. Oh. Ding. A comedian or someone that works in comedy?
It's up to you.
Okay. I would probably want to sit down and talk to Lauren Michaels about comedy production over 4 decades. He's the executive producer for, I mean, obviously for Saturday Night Live, but for everything that has come out of Saturday Night Live. And I'm talking, you know, Superstar Night at the Roxbury, all those 90s spin-off movies, great. Superstar, great. And I'm talking, like, TV shows that have spun off of SNL. You know, everything that goes on that stage for 40 plus years has been Lorne Michaels and everyone else. But everyone else gets seen and everyone else gets heard, and you see one, and every so often they'll do a sketch with Lorne or whatever, but you only see his name once, and it's at the end credits and it says executive producer, and most people just watch it go by on the screen and don't think twice about it because the host was great or the actors were great or the band was everything. But that producer has had that vision for so long and has executed it and other things. I want to pick that brain.
Yeah. Finally, the last question of the interview portion before we take a short break and then move on to...
Oh, God, I have to pee so bad. That's great.
Many segments. If you could tell your 16-year-old self one thing, what would it be?
Keep up the good work. You're doing everything right because you, at 30, are where you need to be, and I'm happy. So, but no one ever told me it's okay to be the funny girl and to keep up what you're doing. I never told me that. I was always like, I need to be this or that or prettier or more athletic or into this or that, or I don't know your music and I have few, you know, like a misfit, but just keep doing it because it's right.
All right. I haven't had time yet to set up a musical transition into the break. So if you wouldn't mind doing some sort of...
I'd love to.
And then ring the bell when you're done.
Sure. This is the opening to The Muppet Show. Okay. You know, I can only think about the part that says this is what we call The Muppet Show. But how does it start? It's... Okay, here we go. Ready?
Ready.
It's time to play the music. It's time to light up lights. It's time to get things started on the Muppet Show tonight. It's time to get things started. And then, what are they? Waldorf and Statler. No, I don't you get things started on the most sensational, muppetational, celebrational, something original. This is what we call the Muppet Show.